Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I was trying to figure out last night why that loss was so annoying or frustrating, and kind of what I came down to, despite everything that was going on, we should have expected a loss there, right? And yet, yeah. It was still annoying. And what I came back to was it was just kind of predictable because of the similar problems kind of hopping up and biting them. But how did you walk away from the game last night?
It's funny. I am in a similar place in that I did not expect them to win that game before Kuzma went out. Right.
Yeah,
and I actually thought they played pretty well for most of that game. They did not shoot well, and that is obviously a very important part of playing. But in terms of like their defensive engagement, I thought their effort level was good. They were missing shots. And for me, like games where guys miss shots, especially when they're open shots, like I can live with that, right? Mm-hmm. That was at least the case for the first three quarters or so. However, the frustration that I walked away with was seeing the same mistakes happening over and over again, and them not being corrected. Like Lonzo's free throw shooting is the big thing that sticks with me. I understand that he was out for most of the offseason due to the surgery, but for most of it, like free throw shooting form is something that is not terribly taxing, right? You can work on that while
you're hurt.
in a different stage of recovery than you can. Like he's not going to run and cut, right? But you can still work on your free throw shooting. And so just, I got kind of fixated, maybe too much of an extent, on the whole thing with his heels, which I tweeted out last night, where his right heel comes off of the ground and his left heel doesn't, which is very unusual. And there have been plenty of guys in NBA history that have been good shooters while having some quirk that is, quote unquote, not how you're supposed to do it, but it's worked for them. It is obviously not working for Lonzo, right? And Lonzo is far from the only guy like that. Like, hell, watching Julius Randle shoot jumpers twisting clockwise with his hips while he did it for his entire Laker career and nobody ever addressing that might – my brain started like snowballing and avalanching down the like, why doesn't anybody ever fix this shit type
right.
thing? So,
I can't relate. I never go down a dark path. Speaking of dark paths, I too snowballed a little bit this last night and then this morning. And today's topic of our show is going to be something that we haven't really talked about much this year. We've talked a lot about the roster and then roster construction, what some of individual players' shortcomings might be doing to the Lakers. But in general, like we haven't really gotten too big picture this year. And and so for today's show, we're going to widen the scope a bit. And I'm going to ask a question. Are the Lakers, organizationally speaking, too young for LeBron James? And this is specifically this stage of LeBron James' career.
Yeah, man, they are. I mean, we should go into why, but didn't we also know this to some extent?
Yeah.
Like, think about it just from a person type standpoint rather than basketball or whatever. Like, I'm 38, right? I can't imagine like having to work toward a common goal with a bunch of people in their early 20s, which is nothing against a bunch of people in their early 20s. Like I remember, and there are plenty of very talented people at that stage. You're just at a different stage of life where the bridge between that is broad, man. Like he was 12 years old when a lot of these guys were born or even a little bit older. And so, yeah, they are. I think that this is a transition year from being too young to seeing who fits, who can play alongside him in a certain type of role. And I think the team probably looks very different at this time next year. Now, I hope that's the last time because the team looks different every year and there's no continuity as a result of that. I understand it, but this next offseason needs to be the last year of that. And we need to make the moves that we need to make over this offseason and then go forward over the next couple of years so that we're no longer too young for LeBron.
Yeah. I think it goes beyond this current roster and whatever moves can be made for the roster moving forward. I think it extends one thing that it's kind of tough because it's reductivist and it really oversimplifies a lot of analysis in professional sports, but a lot of times if there are problems with an organization over the lifetime of that organization, you don't have to look any further than the owner. Right. And I'm not saying that that's the case here with the Lakers. I'm not going there so far yet. But if you look at all of the bad teams out there, teams that have historically underperformed, the New York Knicks, for example, stand out to me the most. They have every market advantage that you could possibly ask for. And yet, they have Jim Dolan. and so, like, a lot, you know, we've heard LeBron mention it before. We've heard other free agents who didn't want to go there mention it before. But there's kind of like this shadow over the Knicks. And it comes in the form of an owner who has a jazz band and writes songs for bloggers. And so what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick second here. And this is going to be a way that I'm going to tease it. But I want to take a look at the Lakers from the top down today and really widen our scope here. And it goes beyond roster construction as of right now. And in a way, I think it kind of explains some of the roster construction. So we'll get to that here in a second. You know that actually happened with Jim Dolan?
What? Which part?
He. Well, he has a jazz band that we already. Yeah, we. Already,
it's a blues band, Anthony. Thank you very much.
Sorry. He has a crappy band, and he wrote a song. I think it was dedicated to the bloggers and the haters.
Wow. I'm surprised you haven't written one about Reddit yet, Anthony. You do have a piano in your house, you know.
Yeah, I just don't have a musical bone in my body. Is the problem. Right. Jen, on the other hand, I might task her with that one.
She could ghostwrite for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So we are going to, though. I want to start by talking about the Lakers from the very top, and Jeannie Buss has been with the Lakers now for a really long time, since basically birth, right? Like, her entire adulthood has been spent watching either her dad run things and then trying to run things with Jim Buss. And so it's not that she's completely inexperienced in this industry at all, by any means. But in this current role, where she is the final say-so, and if there is a call to be made, it's going to reside with her, right? Now, she has done a good job, and I think this is what more owners need to be able to do in doling out responsibilities to the people that she hired and trusts and stuff like that. But in this current role, she's in, what, year three of it?
I think so. If we're talking about like Jim and Mitch, because, I mean, she's always had the same role that she's had, but she was hands off with Jim on the basketball side. Mm-hmm. And really all that changed in that respect is now she they got rid of Jim and Mitch, and now she's hands off with Magic, mm-hmm. who's her hire, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the difference, is that she is the person who installed the person who's running the basketball operations now. And that was not the case before.
Right. A slight difference here, though, is that, like, and one of the things that she mentioned as a frustration was the Lakers were just firing coach after firing coach and firing a coach after that. And when Byron Scott was let go, she was frustrated about, like, we're going through this cycle. And it felt to me, maybe I misread the quotes, that she was a little frustrated with not having a say-so in that, right? Like, she found out about Byron's firing, not even from Jim or Mitch. It was just, she was sitting there one day and then Byron was fired. It was I believe how she framed it in an interview right when she hired Magic and Pelinka and instituted this current culture, right? And so now, though, like, if Magic and Pelinka want to fire Luke, and we might eventually get there, they have to run it by Jeannie, right? And that's where it's slightly different, her role right now compared to what it was with Jim and Mitch, where she was completely hands off before, to her benefit, really. And now it's a little different there. And then go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say that one of the big complaints in, at least, you know, I came in afterward, but one of the big complaints about Jim and Mitch is that they didn't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
It was very like the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. Mm-hmm. And Jeannie's very much empowered Rob and Magic to make decisions. You're absolutely right that she does not like the amount of turnover, right? Mm-hmm. I also think though that, and within that, she is a Luke Walton advocate. She's known to be probably mm-hmm. the strongest voice for him in the organization. Uh-huh. But within that, she Magic is going to do a better job of keeping her in the loop yes. on how those things go. Just the nature of their relationship, ironically, is a lot closer than Jim and Jeannie
yeah.
were, right? And so... I know that that isn't what Jeannie wants, but if that's what Magic and Polenka want, I think that with her ethos of hiring people and trusting them to do the job, if that's what they would really want, I think she would yield to them, even though that's not something that she necessarily wants.
Yeah. So we talked about Jeannie. Now we'll look at the people that she installed. Magic and Rob came into their current jobs with no experience on these jobs specifically. They had distanced experience in it. Magic having obviously played in the NBA, having watched the Dodgers go about running the business the way that they run their business, Polenka being an agent, and seeing the business side of the NBA from that side, from a very player proponent side of things. But they stepped into the Lakers jobs currently without any experience, hands-on experience in running a team. And I'm not going to say that it shows. I think it does to a certain extent, but it's not. I'm not going to put all of the blame on them in this regard. I'm just trying to paint the whole picture of everything that LeBron James stepped into when he agreed to be a Laker. And I do think that some of the mistakes that we've seen here come from a place of a lack of experience. Like going into a season in which JaVale McGee is your only NBA caliber center, like that's a mistake that I think somebody makes if they convince themselves of something through a lack of experience. That yeah, we'll just play small ball. It'll be great. And here the Lakers are. Fortunately, they got Tyson Chandler and turned things around there. But I think that kind of set a tone for me of like, okay, yeah, we are still dealing with a young front office.
I think that's very fair. And I think to kind of add a different dimension to your point, one of the things I haven't liked is how rigid they've been with like the whole idea of you are part of our future plans
yeah.
and you are not. Mm-hmm. Right. So like Julius Randle is a good young player, right? And it was in a market. Now there is dynamics with the agent not wanting to have an unhappy guy and all that, but he was deemed early in last year to not be part of the future. And there wasn't really much that could happen to deviate from that. Brook Lopez was good for us in 1 year, but he was treated as like there was a clear division of like you're our guy or you're not, right? And Brook was not treated as such, and that impacted Brook's interest in coming back, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't necessarily like that amount of rigidity. And then another point I want to make that and kick it back to you with this is I feel like the Lakers don't have enough nerds in the organization.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like, yeah. Like I like hardcore geek, like I love Magic and Polenka as like the face of the franchise. I think there's actually a good dynamic between the two of them. I think there's a lot of talent to mm-hmm. be able to land your LeBron James. Let's not undersell that, right?
Right.
In the overall job that's done.
Yes. Like,
that's way more important than anything else that's happened. And I know you'd agree with that. But they do need so like the only nerds to me in the organization are the guys that are killing it in the draft every year. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, even a Thomas Bryant playing really well in Washington, or you know, the late firsts that we had last year, or the flashes that we see from Sfi, you know, what's funny is that Wagner has probably been one of the least impressive picks that they've had. And that's,
you know, was a non-nerd pick.
That was a non-nerd pick. That was Magic Johnson loving him some Mo Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Wagner's got plenty of time to turn it around, right? But the point being that, like, I just think the nerds need to have more of a voice. The Lakers do not operate well enough on the fringes, even if they're great at the big things like, you know, signing LeBron.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. I'm going to add my couple cents to that here in a second, because I think all of this stuff ties together, and it's an organizational, cultural, borderline cultural concern that I have about the Lakers as they're currently constituted. So we'll get to that here in a second. So before I add my two cents to that, I want to make it clear, though. Like, I still think, like, while the Lakers are probably going to fall out of the playoff picture until LeBron gets back, like, while there are frustrations abound, I still am, for the most part, I wouldn't say happy, but this is about where the Lakers, I thought they would be this season, you know?
Well, I mean, relative to the injuries, too.
Yeah, like that's...
Right. They've been fine. In the few moments they've had close to a healthy team, they've been really good. Mm-hmm. You know, they've actually been better when healthy than I thought they'd be, because they can defend. I didn't think they'd be able to defend this year, and they can. Like, how many teams are going to survive having their top two scorers, one of whom is a superstar, out of the lineup, you know, like with Kuz going out last night? And now obviously it's been longer than just this one game, but I just don't think that most teams play close to their potential with the injuries issues that the Lakers have had.
Especially one that came together to the extent that this one did heading into the season, right?
Yeah, like, they have no continuity. That's a great point. There's nothing to – if the Spurs get hurt, there's enough that's, like, the same as it was last year to keep building on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be clear here. This isn't me freaking out and saying that the Lakers are completely screwed. This is a topic that I've always kind of sort of had in the back of my mind, and then, you know, I headed down a dark path this morning. So to get back to adding to the points that you were making about not having enough of a nerd presence, I like that phrasing of it. But I'd extend it to, and this is a problem that I've had with the Lakers from day one of my fanhood, was it's very insulated. It's very, you know, and they pride themselves on Laker family, and if you do well by the Lakers, you'll always have a spot with the Lakers, right? And there are benefits to that line of thinking. I think superstars around the league look at that loyalty and say that's a great quality in an organization. It also, though, has the downside of potentially missing out on the best candidate for a hire if all you're looking at is the candidate pool of people that you've had experience with before.
And, totally, man. Go ahead.
Well, and I think that lack of a nerd presence has a lot to do with that insulated thinking.
And even so, like, along the same lines, if I can make a tortured analogy here, like, why does a company like Blockbuster go out of business? It's because they did not remain on the cutting edge of what the next version, like, they had all of the resources to do what Netflix did on a bigger scale earlier on and crush something like Netflix. Mm-hmm. They had the infrastructure, but they settled. Like, you cannot confuse being the biggest and the best organization. That is an active process. That is not a stagnant thing. You have to continue to be. And so, like, the Lakers don't have the best in the business at the things that are outside of the salary cap, right? The cap is going to limit. And even the way this roster is constructed is that way, in large part because the Lakers are saving money for next offseason. And so that's going to limit some of, like, how good this year's roster can be for the sake of next year. But I'm talking, like, your analytics department, your coaching staff, your medical staff, all of that. The Lakers are profitable enough to be able to offer the highest salaries in those positions and be acquiring in the business on that. So the fact that they are not at the cutting edge on all of those things is part of the whole not enough of a nerd presence, but it's really more of a, you don't have enough of the people that are the best of the in the business, in the industry at that particular job. And that's inexcusable, in my opinion.
I completely agree. I would – it's not an analogy. It's a line from Black Panther. But when Shuri was showing T'Challa, all of the technological advances in his suit that could be made – he said, well, my suit worked fine before. And she said, well, it works doesn't mean it can't get better, right?
Right.
That the Lakers reached the pinnacle of professional sports in America, that doesn't mean it can't still get better beyond that point. And that's kind of my concern here is that, and we've been working towards this concern for a really long time. And that's not to say, like, we've seen, you know, you can get lucky every so often and wind up with the best in the business because they happen to be there in the first place, right? Like, the scouting department.
Right. Jesse Butts, right? It just happened, like, the guy with the right last name is pretty good at this, right?
Yeah, right. So sometimes it works out. Sometimes it works out. But that's why, again, I focus so much on process here is sometimes you'll get lucky and bad process can lead to good results. But more often than not, if you continue to be, I don't want to say negligent, but I guess for lack of a better term, like if you continue to make the same mistakes, they're going to keep on biting you. And I think that's where the Lakers kind of find themselves right now organizationally.
I mean, you spoke to this earlier, but the talent pool is too small.
Yeah.
Because they're so like, you're a Laker or you're not. Like the talented people that are all over the league, like they're plenty of those people in the other 29 teams or in the G League right now in various mm-hmm. positions. But like, if you're not in the Lakers pipeline, you're not even really a candidate. And so when the pool is that small, of course you can't get the right people.
Hell, it was only like 3 years ago that they finally sent somebody to the MIT sports conference, right?
The Sloan sports conference.
Like that's unforgivable, man. Like, given the resources that the Lakers have, they should be leading at the very forefront of all of these jobs that are uncapped. And so, I guess to start to wrap this thing up here, my hope is that over the next umpteen years of Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka's tenure, not just these 4 years that they have LeBron for, they start to rethink some of these things. They start to push back on the narrative that the Lakers only hire Lakers people. And you know, if they do, I just think that there's no way that backfires. Like there's no way that going out and getting the best candidates in all of these various uncapped departments of your organization, that doesn't work out.
Right. And it's not like, I mean, the same principle of people wanting to play in LA if all things are equal, that applies to people in those jobs too, right?
Yeah.
Like this is where people like living here. If they can get a job where they're making enough money to live here, like this is one of those cities in the world that people want to be. And so the ability to acquire that type of talent on top of the money and all of that, like it's there. It really is. It's just they're locked off to the rest of the basketball world. Maybe that's a little dramatic way of phrasing it, but in a lot of situations, like if you're not in, like even like a Gunnar Peterson, right? And with the disclaimer that I have no expertise in what Gunnar Peterson does. I have no idea if he's the best at what he does or he's the worst at what he does.
Yeah, but by simply reason, looking at us, you would know that we don't.
That is not a matter of expertise for us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like his, like the process of bringing a guy like that on board is like he has pre-existing relationships mm-hmm. with people that like there wasn't like this big pool or this big application and interview process of all of these really talented people around the world. It's no, like you're one of my guys. And so we're going to bring you in. Right. And again, I have no idea how good Gunnar Peterson is at his job. It's not a knock on him at all. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're just closed off from the rest of the basketball.
It's a question mark. It's not a knock. It's a question mark. Do we know for a fact that Gunnar Peterson was the best man for the job? We don't know.
Right.
you know, and that's a bit of a concern. And I think this can be extended, I think, to their free throw shooting thing. Like, did the right free throw shooter never like play for the Lakers? can they not just bring in a really good shooter for the Lakers to come in and talk to the, you know, work with these guys? And because one of the things, so Luke Walton said after the game when he was asked about the free throw shooting, he said that last year they instituted a policy where they had to like check in with their free throws and do all these things, and said that maybe they'll go in that direction again this year. And I'm just saying, like, one, maybe what? Two, it doesn't matter how many repetitions you have. If you're practicing bad practice, then it's not, you may as well not even be doing it. And how is Lonzo going to improve if he doesn't have the coaching necessary to tell him, no, either lift both of your heels or put both of them down on your free throw, like whatever the thing might be, there isn't the coaching there for them to figure this out.
The Lakers coaching staff, they're all generalists. That's my background on a much, much lower level. I'm not comparing myself to them, but that's my background too. Like, shooting coaches are a thing because it's a specialty. It's something that, like, that thing about the heels is just one thing that I notice with my relatively limited knowledge, right? A shooting coach is going to be able to break that down from how you're leaning, like every different element head to toe. And what the Lakers have are these overall basketball guys, and those generalists have a place. They like, they're assistant coaches. That's their job, is to be generalists, and maybe they're given specialties within that. But not having somebody who their job is to teach people how to shoot a basketball better, to me, like, you got to have a guy like that and play. It ain't counting against the salary.
Exactly.
You know, like,
yeah.
Like, why do we not have a specialist at the most important element of the game?
They're giving away points. They're free. They're free. It's right there in the name. They're free. And I don't know, man, I thought of all of the things that went through last night's game and then this morning and rewatching some of the game and transcribing some of the quotes. The most frustrating thing to me was that response, that idea of, and I thought it perfectly encapsulated my concern that you and I have been talking about here, where it's like, well, it hasn't really bitten us quite yet. And so, therefore, we aren't going to address it until we absolutely have to. And it's like, yes, technically, maybe it's working. It obviously isn't if you're the worst shooting free throw shooting team in the league. But I guess if your explanation here that you haven't addressed it is that it hasn't legitimately affected enough games for us to go there, then my question is, like, well, when what are we drawing the line on there? Like, where are we going?
I mean, that should be an advantage, right? Now, the Lakers did not acquire enough good free throw shooters, right? Like, this is not necessarily unexpected, but, like, you should be leveraging every advantage that you have. And what I would say is, like, the Lakers are going to be good again once they get healthy or close to it, right? That is not something – it's just that this period of time when there is all of the injuries, that's when the – you're not – getting the most out of every area where you could be, that's when that really starts to show up and make it, like, there have been plenty of games Lakers have shot 60% from the line and it's been frustrating, but they eventually won. Mm-hmm. They don't have that type of margin for error at this point with all of the injuries.
Yep. And when everybody gets better and gets healthy, right? If anybody, I can't even say when in that respect, but if and when everybody gets healthy, well, then why wouldn't you want to be better? Like, why wouldn't you want to? So the Lakers are going to be good when everybody is healthy because we've seen them be a good team when everybody is healthy. But why wouldn't you want to be? Why wouldn't you want to continue to improve past good? it's these margins that separate the good from the great teams, and I'm concerned that the Lakers aren't even trying to take advantage of those margins.
Yeah, same here, man.
All right, let's try to send everybody off into the weekend on a positive note. And where I want to go with this is, if I would have told you that last night the Lakers would lose yet another role player to go with the lack of role players that they already have. Tyson Chandler was – I don't know. You were there, and you could see better than I could, but he didn't look like he was moving all that well.
No, he's struggling, man.
I saw JaVale McGee clutching at his chest at one point. That kind of freaked me out a little bit because of the pneumonia that he's I would imagine, still recovering from. Lonzo Ball had a single point in the fourth quarter. Brandon Ingram had 2 points in the fourth quarter, and yet the Lakers lost by 7. And so my question is, and this was one of the things that you and I have talked about to a large extent here, is like if any other team has that type of a loss, the reaction from it is, well, that's an okay loss. It's that you would prefer to win, but that's an okay loss. But we can't quite do that with these Lakers in this conference right now. So my question to you though is, are you seeing enough to where when LeBron comes back, Rondo comes back, all those guys, that it's continuing to be worth investing time and finding out what the young core and everybody is capable of alongside LeBron?
Yes, I do. Let's get one thing straight first. We're insane. Like, Laker fans and the outside reaction to the Lakers from non-Laker fans is even more insane, right? And unrealistic. And like, you cannot have a bad game as a Laker and on ESPN, like, do it quietly. We were talking about this, Darius and the Kamenetsky brothers. We were talking about this on Twitter yesterday, where it's like, you know, we can romanticize these guys from other teams because the only times they hit our timeline is when they play really well. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's like, oh God, I wish we had drafted this guy instead. It's like, are you watching their like 3-for-12 nights?
Right. Too? Yeah. Did you watch the other three games that he played this week?
Right. And so we're insane. And then the people on the outside talking about the Lakers are even more insane. So a night like last night, they defended really well, man. And that is the main thing that keeps me really excited about what this team will eventually be by the end of the season, knock on wood, health willing, is they play really good defense when they want to play really good defense. And they have LeBron James along with these battle-tested vets. To me, when it comes to playoff time and it gets to that point, again, the only thing I see keeping the Lakers out of the playoffs is injuries for a longer period of time than I think we'll have, knock on wood. But come playoff time, to me, the kids, for the most part, start dropping in the pecking order of importance. And that's when a guy like Rondo's playoff experience, Tyson Chandler, JaVale McGee, mm-hmm. all of these veterans that the Lakers have acquired, that's when really they're going to be more dependable, I think, than the young guys are. But the young guys can defend, by and large. And that's something that can keep you on the court. And so to me, that was my encouraging takeaway, and from this period of time, is when they choose to lock in to defend, which is not always the case, they are pretty good. And I think that with LeBron James is a good combo.
Yeah, it's at least enough for this season. That's all. That's really heading into this year. That's all that we really needed to see from the kids, right? That was the absolute baseline, was be good enough that some kind of, you know, disaster trade didn't need to happen. And we haven't seen that, you know. We haven't seen that. If anything, we've seen plenty more than that. To where I'm interested to see, like, if this was just a simulation, it would be great to be able to like go off into the future, check out what these guys are capable of, and then come back. Because I really do think it's an intriguing roster. There are intriguing pieces around LeBron. We just don't have that capability yet. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I think. It's easy to get caught up in tough losses, especially last night with the emotion of Paul George being the guy who really beats the Lakers, and on the night that he gets booed and all that stuff. It's really easy to get kind of carried away with the frustrations that come with that. But really, given everything that's gone on, the things are fine. But to bring this conversation fully circle, fine. It's always better to beat fine than just shoot for fine.
For sure. They need to get healthy, man. Yes. Like, we can talk about the fringes and the lack of nerdiness and not leveraging every advantage and all of that. But like, most teams, especially in a Western Conference that is the way it is, if you lose your by far best player and then a couple of other guys who are in your top five, top six, mm-hmm. yeah, you're gonna take a drop off. So I know that's not high end analysis or anything, but like, let's not overreact too much to a team that is as shorthanded as the Lakers are.
Yep. All right, that'll do it for this episode and week of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hope you guys had a safe and healthy new year. We're going to keep things going. We are right back to daily shows. So make sure you guys are getting your questions in on iTunes for what I'm going to record on Sunday for Monday show. And hell, keep firing in, because if we ever go through a lull like we did the other day, it's nice to be able to go back and ask Pete some of these questions too. So have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll talk to you on Monday.